thank you, Ken, for your work. Next up, item three, statewide hunting and fishing proclamation. Ken, can you start us off?
Morning, Commissioners. My name is Ken Krasowski, the Inland Fisheries Division, and I'm going to go over the regulation proposals that have we've had a public hearing and give you comments of the summaries from those hearings and from all other means of comment. First one is on Lake Texoma. The current regulation there concerns striped bass. Daily bag is 10. A possession limit is also 10, which is twice the statewide daily bag, not the Texoma daily bag. We have a proposed change there to move the possession limit to 20, which would be twice the Texoma daily bag. That will alleviate the angler confusion over that possession limit. We don't believe it will have any biological impact on the striper population. There will be some minor differences with Oklahoma due to our definition of the final destination. But we think this will help alleviate some of that confusion and move us a little bit closer. We did receive some comments on that. All these comments that we received were through our website, so we did have a public hearing in Sherman. We didn't receive any comments on this proposal at that time, and had a few additional comments for it and one against it since the preparation of the slide. The next proposal we had is to extend the legalization of bow fishing for catfish. As you recall, we implemented that for 1 year at last year's April Commission meeting. We have been collecting some information through game warden contacts and a survey of bow anglers. However, most of the bow fishing activity was concentrated during the spring and summer prior to this change being implemented in September 1 of 2006. We'd like to extend that for another year to continue to try and collect some information on this change and any possible impacts on the population. We did receive a number of comments. All of these except one were on the website. We did receive that one public hearing, one comment against it, and we've had a few additional public comments of both for and against since then. Those are all the proposals in the fisheries have. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to.
Any questions or comments from the commissioners? No? If not, yes, go ahead, Commissioner. Any other comments from any commissioner? Thank you. Ken, Mike, I believe you're next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I'm Mike Berger, Director of the Wildlife Division, and I'm here today to discuss the proposals in wildlife for changes in the statewide regulation. The first of these regards the spring Rio Grande wild turkey season. 2 years ago, we simplified this season by adding a week to its length and by combining an old north and south zone to make the season uniform statewide. And that's what that season looks like there today. That's the season we're engaged in right now. The proposal was to add the zones back or reinstitute the zones. We knew that the 44-day length was right, but that we had missed some opportunity by doing this, so this is to improve hunter opportunity. The proposal was to take the south zone and move the opening date 2 weeks earlier, which would be the Saturday closest to March 18th, and in the north zone to put off the season a week, delay it by 1 week to make it open the Saturday closest to April the 7th. There was public comment on this issue, 75 people in favor and 114 against. And the reason it was against was primarily that some people said the north zone should open 2 weeks earlier. Many people wanted the north zone to remain as is, and they felt it was better gobbling opportunity, better hunting opportunity with the season the way it is now. So our staff recommendation would be to change our proposal and leave the north zone season as it currently is, starting Saturday closest to April the 1st and running for 44 consecutive days. The south zone would still be opening 2 weeks earlier than now to start at the Saturday closest to March 18th. The next item is a mule deer housekeeping item. 2 years ago, we adopted rules to eliminate double tagging, and where hunters are no longer required to use a tag off their license if they are also using an MLD, a LAMPS, a special drawn hunt permit tag, or some similar. When we proposed and adopted these rules, we inadvertently failed to include the general antlerless mule deer permits on this, and so this proposal would help us eliminate double tagging of antlerless mule deer taken under the authority of the general antlerless mule deer permit. There were 58 in favor of this and 17 against. The folks who were opposed to it generally are opposed to the MLD in philosophy. Also, as part of mule deer housekeeping, we implemented a mule deer MLD program 2 years ago, and we inadvertently failed to make provision for the archery mule deer season when we did that. So this proposal would make the MLD permits valid for the archery season with archery equipment only. And that proposal was supported 90-14. Again, the people who opposed that were opposed to the MLD program in general. For archery whitetails, we've had continuing dialogue with the archery hunting community, and they saw an opportunity for an additional 5 days between the end of the current archery season and the opening of the general season. And we think this is a legitimate request, and it was not a resource issue, and it was put out for public comment. And that extension was overwhelmingly supported, 144-42. The opponents thought that the deer needed time to settle down between the two seasons before the gun deer season opened, but it was widely supported otherwise. Lesser prairie chicken is to, this proposal is to give increased opportunity and encourage more participation in the managed lands lesser prairie chicken program by landowners. Most of the landowners in the program or who might like to be in the program are already doing some habitat management activities already, and the requirement of five habitat management practices is a little overly restrictive and could be reduced to three and still encourage more people to come into the program. And also because of the different habitat types that lesser prairie chickens use in their life cycle for nesting or feeding or booming grounds, all these are less likely to be found on single landowners. So they scatter their activities among several landowners, and because of variability in land ownership sizes, it can make issuing these permits challenging. So we would like to have the opportunity to make the harvest up to 10% of the population instead of up to only 5%, and we feel that this would allow our biologists to make issuing these permits more equitable for landowners in the region and encourage greater participation in that. And that was supported as well. 55 agreed and 8 disagreed. Those who disagreed felt like this was a benefit to wealthy landowners only, primarily. Next item is javelina. Earlier this year, we were petitioned by a private landowner to allow more hunting opportunity on javelinas by increasing the seasonal bag limit. And the last meeting, we were authorized to publish this. It would allow javelina hunting under a managed lands permit program very similar to that that's widely in practice for whitetail deer. Under this proposal, participating landowners would be required to collect population and harvest data and do habitat management, just as they are required to do under the whitetail program. This proposal was supported by a margin of 58-46. Those in opposition thought it was special treatment for large landowners, or that it would in fact constitute a depredation permit for those who would engage in this. And that is where our javelina seasons are right now. The blue is a year-round season, and the red is a half-year season. The last proposal was has to do with the taxidermy record-keeping requirements. The taxidermist currently is required to keep records of taxidermy work 2 years following the date of completion of that taxidermy work. And since sometimes the clients don't pick up that work right away, we would like to have the two-year cycle run from the time the recipient picks up that taxidermy work and keep those records for 2 years. That was supported as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions about these.
Any questions for Mike? We have a number of people signed up. We'll get to you after Larry's presentation. Any questions for Mike on the wildlife proposals?
Thank you.
We'll get our testimony here in a minute. Thank you, Mike. Larry, make your presentation.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, I'm Dr. Barry McKinney, Director of Coastal Fisheries. Run through you with a series of proposals as we discussed in the workshop yesterday. First proposal dealing with increase in minimum size from 12 to 15 inches on sheep set, as we discussed the reason for that yesterday. In public comment summary, we had 32 for and 11 against. Concerns being, of course, as noted here. Diamondback terrapins. Proposal for no take provision, as we again discussed yesterday on that. No changes from recognition from yesterday. Public comment in that matter was 29 for and 4 against. Regarding tarpon proposal, we looked at two options in the recommendations, catch and release and the one fish 90-inch minimum. And as we discussed yesterday, where we're going, I want to make it clear that one of my goals for dealing with tarpon is eventually get to a catch and release fishery. When you look at these fish, 90-inch fish, we're talking about fish that are 55 and 60 years old. I mean, these are significant resources, and none of us want to lose those. At this time, we're just not where we need to be. When we move that direction, I need the full cooperation of Louisiana, Mexico, and those groups, and of our tarpon fishermen. And in working with them, we've tried to elicit their input as to how best to proceed. And of course, here are some of our comments. Again, good support for catch and release at this time, but in working with that fishery, they felt that until we can make sure we have a standardized catch and release approach and work with these other states, that they didn't want to be put at a disadvantage, and I understand that. So we were able to visit with one of the top scientists in tarpon research in the world right now, Dr. Jerry Hall, and come up with a recommendation on a link that would protect of these fish, but also allow this to have some of the state record. And in doing that, our recommendation would be, at this time, to allow one fish bag limit with a minimum size set at 85 inches, which is an increase from 80 inches at that for now, and then move forward in the future. You will see me back up here at some point moving that one forward, because that's really where we need to go with this fishery. Right, sea trout management, let's talk about that for a second. We discussed this yesterday, so I won't spend time there, just to make the point that we had tried to make sure that we had many opportunities for our folks to express their opinion on this matter, and make sure that all of our state leadership was informed, and I think we've been successful in that. Again, for most of our audience, again, we've seen these graphics before, our concerns over the population there. Just a special note, as we have moved into this year for the first time, our catches of spotted sea trout and lower Laguna Madre dropped below the statewide average, which, of course, has continued to increase our concern. The spawning site biomass, the base of that population, again, continues to decrease, and see no turn around for that unless we do take some action. And when we look at the distribution, length frequency distributions, we see that in the last several years, since our last set of regulations, the fact that the fish recruit well. We have plenty of fish coming into the population, but once they hit that 17, 18 inch length, they begin to disappear, which is a classic sign of a fishing pressure driven issue. So our recommendation in Lower Laguna Madre would be for a bag and possession limit of five fish per day. looking at where that would be in effect. Of course, we are recommending a northern boundary at Marker 21 in the lower part of Laguna Madre, and all of the waters, all of the coastal salt waters of the Laguna Madre, to make that clear. We're talking about all the all waters within the salt water or the coastal boundary to the west, and the seaward boundary would be along the western margin of Padre Island itself, to exclude the jetties. We don't want to get out onto the jetties, but just to the inside of that, to make sure that was clear. That's a little bit of a change, as we noted, from our original proposal. Main reason being is that we didn't want to get into confusion with folks fishing on the jetties, whether they could keep 5 or 10 or whatever. We'll just make it clear in that way. As far as public comment, get over here to where I catch up with us a little bit. We had input from Port Mansfield Chamber of Commerce and the fishing tournament. They sent us letters totaling 398 in opposition. The Coastal Bend Guides Association, similar letter, 707 in opposition. The Port Isabel Chamber of Commerce, a resolution in favor of the regulation, and the Lower Laguna Madre Foundation in similar support. Internet petition in favor of the proposed regulations, coming in around 2,097 individual names and addresses, and then some of those folks, they expressed some preferences, as you see there, of anywhere from 3, 4, 5, and 7 fish. Overall, our public comments summary is FAR 2,256 and against 1,137. We received a number of more comments today and yesterday, and roughly the same proportion, more letters, but not much different than totals, but we have gotten a few more, even as late as this morning. I will come back as we finish up this round and talk about the spotted sea trout and some of the public comments that we received. But proceeding with Red Snapper at this point, we had 3 recommendations. One dealing with lowering our length limits to match some of the federal regulations, use of circle hooks, and then mirroring federal commercial regulations and state regulations. As we discussed yesterday, until the federal agencies kind of settle on an option, we don't want to put our inshore anglers at a disadvantage, so we were asked that we go through a process whereby the commission would delegate to the executive director of the authority for rulemaking, should we need that. And I want to make that clear. If we can work this process through the normal commission process, we'll do that. And we'll have full hearings and all those types of things. But in case we get in a bind with the Fed, we want to make sure that we can move as quickly as possible. And so we would ask the executive director to be delegated this authority for rulemaking process in case we need that. We continue to recommend adoption of use of circle hooks only for taking a red snapper. In discussions with Commissioner Park and others, we have to be careful on our definition to make sure that we really are using circle hooks, and that's clear and easy as possible for our law enforcement to follow that. But we're kind of stepping out ahead of this. Other federal agencies and others are going to go there, so we're going to take the first step, and so we'll have to learn a little bit, and we may have to come back to you with to clean this up a little bit to make sure it's effective, but it's a good first step. And the question that just makes it clear that what we're talking about, that the circle hooks apply to natural bait, not artificial, and as a practical matter, In reality, though, when we say circle hooks for a red snapper, we really mean offshore. If you're going to go offshore, you better be using circle hooks fishing in our shore. You're going to catch snapper, and so just you might as well go there anyway. And, of course, this applies only to polling line. Of course, spear fishing and other activities are not affected by this proposal. We do certainly recommend that we mirror the federal regulations regarding IFQs and commercial fisheries in our state waters, again, to give our law enforcement folks the option to pursue these cases in whatever way that they may be most successful. So that's something we want, a tool we want them to have. And, of course, support for this was strong as well. A series of general recommendations, again, as we discussed yesterday, looking at the idea of using airboats, jet-driven devices, and others to pursue, harass, or harry fishes. We want to expand that to all vessels because of the proliferation of shallow draft boats these days. But we do want to try to clarify some concerns that folks raised in our public comments about what pursue and so forth means. So at this point, we would recommend adopting something that says it is unlawful to use any vessel to harass fish, because we know what harass is, and we use it as a common law enforcement term, and And we'll take a look at this as we go through our sunset process eventually to make sure it's still functional. But at this time, we want to leave that tool with our game wardens, but look at it carefully as we go along. Again, for exempting offshore aquaculture permitted to facilities from bag and size limits, if we're going to allow this industry to develop offshore, as we have allowed to put a rule together for them, we do have to allow them to harvest their product and bring it ashore. Of course, those will be in larger numbers than recreational bag limits, so we have to give them that opportunity, and this is what this proposal would do. Some of the opposition was concerns over harvest of wild fish and so forth. I think we've addressed those in our aquaculture rules to make sure that would be minimized. So that answers most of those concerns, I believe. Another one is to allow the use of freshwater catfish heads and craft traps. We discussed this briefly yesterday, but I did want to clarify it, and it was asked to do that. I meant to do so yesterday. We're not talking about any freshwater catfish. They have to come from the aquaculture farms and have a paper trail that can find where they're coming from. So it's from aquaculture sources that they can use these catfish heads. That's what we're talking about there. And again, final kind of cleanup item is to get some consistency between statutory language and our proclamation language when we talk about coastal boundaries in one and saltwater boundaries in another. Make sure we're this one term so we can enforce that. That's coastal boundaries. That's all saltwaters that we're talking about, the same thing. No real opposition there. What I'd like to proceed to is talk about some of the comments on the responses and comments on the spotted sea trout issue. We had many, and I tried to go through and summarize a few of those, just a few key points, and try to give you some background on that, kind of where our responses would be. And of course, you'll hear comments today that from all five, I'm quite sure. There was a group of comments that I grouped in this way. One, that there was some concern over the possession and bag limits. And where we're making a proposal here is that bag and possession be the same. Five fish in other parts of the state, you could have 10 and 20, or you typically twice the stated bag limit. But here, to make sure that we can enforce this thing equitably and make it very straightforward, our proposal is bag and possession would be the same. If you're on the water, you better have only five fish per angler out there. That's what that means. Now, if you're on shore and that type of thing, that's a whole different thing, but this is what we mean by that. There are a number of concerns over regionalization, and we talked about this in briefings, but not much. This is what we're proposing is a pretty dramatic change from our standard approach to managing coastal fisheries, where we've tried to maintain uniform regulations up and down the coast. And the fact is, we're just to a point in our regulation and fishing and fishing pressure that we need to move away from that and take advantage of situations, and I use the analogy basically is that, you know, when you have a flat tire on a car, you don't go out and buy four new tires to fix it. You fix that flat tire and move on. And really the plus thing is we're really in a fortunate position here in the state of Texas with the status of our fisheries that we can afford to do that. And we can begin to take a look at some of these issues and address them ahead of time and not react to crisis situations. And that's what we're talking about here. We can try to move things in the right direction before it becomes a real difficult situation. Nonetheless, there's always concern with any kind of change like that, and many of the expressions of that was the fact that some people said, no, we don't like regionalization at all, let's just apply all rules statewide. There was concern that if you apply a regional rule in one place, will that drive fishing pressure to other adjacent areas and hurt our fishery there, what would happen there? And just a concern that if we do regionalization here, we might come and do it some other place in the state in the future. And my response to that last one is, yes, that's a possibility. It's not something we want to do necessarily, and don't see any particular place on the horizon where we will be coming back to you to propose that. But that's a tool in our bag that we want to maintain, because our monitoring program, which all this is based on, and we've been working on for 30 years, is designed to do just that. It's a powerful tool. And it's one that we want to make full use of to make sure our fisheries is the best that they can be. And then economic impacts, of course, is a concern, and you're going to hear plenty from that. I won't speak to that. You'll hear both sides of that here and make your own judgment there. My general response to folks who are raising it is just this, is that when I look at those trends in overall population, spawning stock, biomass, the things that we're looking at, and I talk to my biologists, and they say they don't see anything unless we do something, they don't see those trends changing. So the point I can kind of make is you can either basically pass now, we can take a small step now, or sometime down the road, it could be a much more severe step. You do not want to get in a situation where other states have had to go on, and Florida's done that, where they've had to close seasons, for example. Our options can get to where we do not want to go. We want to take advantage of a small step here to turn the direction a little bit and go, and improve it so we don't have to go there. But again, you'll hear more on that from speakers, I am sure. Take a look at a couple of specific comments. One kind of a general comment that came out at some point was that the science on which the recommended regulation is based is not adequate. Sampling is not sufficient. And speaking to my observations, being there on the site, and the observations of my associates tend to indicate that there's really, really no problem there at all. The general response to that is this, and in fact, it is a good point, that fishing for a spotted sea trout in the lagoon is really almost as good as anywhere else in the state right now. Now, our statewide trends, every place else on the coast, every other bay system is headed up right where we want to go. This is the one place where it's headed down. So you might not notice anything right now compared to any place else, but you sure could in the future. And as we noted, for the first time of this year, our catch rates fell below statewide averages in the Laguna. And that shouldn't be the situation in Laguna Madre. The Laguna Madre should be the number one spotted sea trout fishery in the world. It's thought of that way, and we want to keep it that way, and that's where we're going. And of course, the concern is that we're looking down the future, that it's the foundation of that fishery, that spawning stock biomass, that the thing that supports it is what we're really looking at. We do not want to be in a situation where we have, for example, a freeze like we had in the 80s and have to try to recover from that. Our spawning stock biomass is about half of what it was then, and so our recovery time could be significantly worse. And so we do not want to be in a position to have to deal with that, because those situations will occur. Hope not, but they will occur. As far as our database, I think it's quite extensive. The information on which we base our recommendation comes from 1,980 gill nets, 2,640 trawls, 4,628 bag seine. We have talked to a lot of people down there, 32,000 anglers over a period of some 2,926 days. We have a very significant database on which we're basing our recommendations. In addition, of course, not only is have we done that at Mr. Cook's direction and certainly with our support, we went through a very extensive review of our procedures and processes over a science review over 2004, brought in nationally recognized experts, peer review, to take a look at our procedures. And basically, although they always have some improvements we can make, they basically come back to, this is a national model. This is what everyone should do. So I can tell you not only that this is sound science, it is the best science that's available on which we can manage our fisheries. Another set of questions was basically the justification for lowering spotted sea trout bag limits is only a hypothesis. Other management options like taking away professional fishing guide limits were hypotheses and really made no difference in creel counts. Again, certainly I would beg to differ with that. That, of course, yes, the proposals we brought forward to you are based on models that we use our data to generate. But that's what you have to do in these regulations. We're, as I said, our proposal, in fact, our models would suggest that to be most effective, we should probably look at a 3-bag fish limit. Bob, just keep reminding me of that, a 3-bag fish limit rather than 5. But 5 seemed a reasonable first step, and one of the reasons that we could make that step is that, as our models predict, we'll see the benefits of this process within about 50% of the benefits in the first year and over 80% by the second and third year. So we'll see if we're making progress pretty quickly. The fix, if you will, is long-term, but we'll see progress, and so we'll see if we're doing well. And then, of course, we know these things work. You get an idea, for example, in 2002 when we eliminated the guide bag limit, you can see that these regulations do have an effect. When you put them into place, you can see that the numbers for the guides have declined, or guided trips on boats have declined because we took that limit away from the guides. And so they do have responses that show up. Environmental issues of poor water quality and or the lack of water circulation is what's causing the problem. Parks and Wildlife needs to address those issues first rather than restricting fishing. And certainly we have been much involved and have been since my career and before that on dealing with issues in the Laguna Madre and, before you, there's a, we put together a summary, about three-page summary of what we've been doing over the years in the Laguna Madre, from dredging, from dealing with issues of dredging of intercoastal shrimp farms, water quality in Arroyo, Colorado, brown and red tides, and the restoration of Bahia Grande. And it's been, these kind of issues are a challenge, and moving forward with them, and they're a long-term solution. I would tell you that because of the work of our biologists from all divisions working down in the lower Laguna Madre area and working with our partners at TTEQ and the General Land Office and the cities surrounding Arroyo, Colorado, we're on the edge of making some really dramatic moves to help protect water quality in Laguna Madre. We've been working on it for a long time, and there's some challenges, but we're making some progress. I'm pretty happy with that. But the challenges are there, of course, long term. Now, when I look at our data, though, is what is the health of the Laguna Madre? Well, when you look at, we see some species are declining, as it says here, some are increasing, and some are about where, you know, just average, kind of staying on an even keel. Basically, we're not seeing, those environmental issues that are affecting our fishery down there. The Laguna Madre is a healthy body of water. Now, does it mean there's not a problem there, not potential problems that we just can't detect? There's always that issue, and we're always going to continue to look under those issues. But the key issue is that even if there is undetected environmental problems, even if there's something that comes up in that perspective, we still have to manage the fishery that's there. Whatever that fishery is, we have to try to make sure it's sustainable under whatever conditions occur. So we're going to have to do that no matter what as we try to address these other issues. But from us, when we look at all these factors, as we talked about in the data here, there's only one known predator that takes spotted sea trout when they start hitting about 17 and 18 inches and don't take them out before. That's us. So fishing pressure is a part of this issue and a key part of it, and that's where we certainly have focused on that regulation. Water circulation in Laguna Madre, talk about that for a second. As you can see from the diagram here, inputs for water, from the land cut coming south, from the Brazos Santiago Pass going north, Nanscoil Pass, and of course the intercoastal waterway, which has frankly been a plus there of helping circulation in that regard. That's what occurs, and there's been some testimony in the writing that if we could open the Mansfield Pass, that it would solve the problems. And the whole issue of passes, these natural passes along the Texas coast, is a problematic one. We have so altered the water landscape of the state of Texas with about 3 million acres of surface reservoirs, the intercoastal waterway that runs 400 miles up and down it, the diversion of water. We significantly altered the hydrology of the coast, and it has affected these passes, and not in a positive way for the most part, and so we do have to work to maintain them, and it's a difficult issue, and passes, building of passes is a positive thing. We would like, we need them open, and certainly we support that, but the way we have to do it these days, the expense and the cost is very problematic, and you really have to weigh very carefully your cost benefits from doing that, and will you get the benefit that the cost that will come. In this situation, when we look at it, and looking at Mansfield Pass and looking at the data we have, when we look at, again, at our spawning site biomass, is just using that as an example graph, when we recognize the fact that the Fort Mansfield Pass has been on a 2-year maintenance dredging plan cycle until 1999, and when that cycle ended and the Corps' money dried up, it's been dredged over all that period of time and kept open until then, and of course over since 1999 it's begun to close up, and it's a serious issue. Don't get me wrong, I'll make this point very clearly. I'm talking about ecosystem issues here. The fact that the pass is closing up and restricting boating and access is a serious issue for that port, and we need to help them as best we can. But when you look at the impact of that opening on our situation we're talking about here, the pass has been open while that fishery has been declining. Additionally, as I mentioned earlier, when we look at the recruitment, and recruitment, of course, is an issue of small fish coming into the population, our recruitment for spotted sea trout is good, better, in fact, in the last 5 years than it's been previously. We have lots of young, we have sufficient numbers of young fish coming into the population. That's not where they're disappearing. Another species that certainly is dependent on circulation, the red drum. Red drum, of course, spotted sea trout reproduce within the bays and within the passes themselves. But for red drum, as we all know, gather up in the fall, move offshore and spawn, and then the larvae and eggs drift back in on the currents and distribute themselves. So they are absolutely dependent on adequate circulation for distribution. Well, red drum, both adults and subadults, are at record numbers in the Laguna Madre, giving me an indication that our circulation, at least from an ecosystem level, is sufficient for those species. There was some concern about bait fish, what the status of bait fish in relation to these circulations. Well, I picked out two, Atlantic croaker and white striped mullet, the two main bait fish for or food fish for spotted sea trout, and the long-term trends in both species are positive. So we're seeing, and they do vary year to year, but on the long term, those forage fish populations are positive. Go back. That's the recommendation. So with that, I'm going to back up just a little bit. With that, I think that's the kind of a summary of my responses to some of the general questions that are there, and it's what kind of gives you a base of what has moved us to make that recommendation. That the one place we can be effective in sustaining this population is in our fishing regulation as we have proposed. With that, Mr. Chairman, we do have the recommended motion for the statewide proclamation here in front of you. I know that obviously there's comment and so forth, and be available to answer questions at your direction, sir.
Thank you, Larry. And we do have quite a few folks signed up for public comment. So let's get to that. And then if the commissioners have any questions for the staff that are prompted by that testimony, we'll call you back up and do that. Let's get started with Mike Forstner and Bruce Shuler. Be ready.
Good morning. There's an aspect of the proposal that wasn't specifically addressed by Dr. McKinney just now, and that was there's a proposal to ban or make unlawful diamondback terrapins intake, and I'm here to speak in support of that. I am an associate professor at Texas State University. I've been working on turtles in the state for about the last 20 years, and I've been a member of the Terrapin, Gulf Coast Terrapin Working Group for the last 8. My work in the state on terrapins began in 97, and all available evidence would agree with the recommendation that we regulate or prevent take of those animals. I make one comment to the commission, and that is that we also need to look at a very serious impact that is done on those taxa as bycatch in crab pots. And we heard about crab pots as ghost pots. In one occasion, we collected the remains of 37 adult terrapins in one pot that had probably been abandoned for several years. The technology exists, just like we went through with the shrimp fishery, to exclude, the light hadn't come on, so I'm just checking. We have worked with the shrimp fishery to exclude turtles from their trawls, and the same technology exists that doesn't impact the crab fishery to modify their crab pots in order to exclude the adult females that are critical. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Appreciate that. Any questions for staff? Larry, you want to speak to that?
No, I appreciate those comments. And, of course, in summarizing our vision on terrapins, that was one of the issues we talked about at the very beginning, and it's what really drove us to take a look at that as a concern over crab traps. In talking with the doctor before the meeting, we're going to be visiting with him about some of those technical fixes on crab traps to see what they have and see what we can work
and
with.
And certainly the work you've done in cleaning up the abandoned crab traps,
that's a big one.
Big impact.
That's huge.
How many thousand? I thought you had them all.
22,000.
Come on.
Exactly. He's been in my office looking on my wall. I guess.
Nice strike, guys. Now, if Gene Riccardi said that, I might believe it.
Whatever my boss says, I agree.
Is that right, Riccardi? Oh, he must have told you that. All right, Mr. Shuler. And then we'll have Scott Murray be ready.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Bruce Shuler. Along with my wife, we own and operate Getaway Adventures Lodge in Fort Mansfield, Texas. As a Fort Mansfield business owner, guide, and concerned sportsman, I fully support the spotted sea trout proposal as submitted by Dr. McKinney. Coming from Fort Mansfield, I can assure everyone these proposals have generated strong opinions in our community as well as along the coast. But I would much more prefer to have our limits reduced now than to have restrictive limits after a catastrophic event to the point that it may be a catch-and-release fishery. Businesses in Fort Mansfield and our local Chamber of Commerce are concerned lowering our limits will have a negative impact on their bottom line. However, my business operation, the last 3 years, I've asked our guests to limit their trout to no more than 5, nothing over 22 inches. During these 3 years, my business has continued to increase an average of 8 to 11% per year, prompting me to raise my rate by almost 20% this year. Subsequently, my bookings continually show a growth over last year at this time. But a lot of anglers on the Texas coast don't understand, the Lower Laguna Madre is unlike any other Texas bay that generally have deep water reefs and structures. The Laguna Madre is a shallow water system very similar to the Florida Keys. We sometimes affectionately call it the Texas Keys. The unique nature of the Lower Laguna Madre is what attracts fishermen to our end of the coast, not to fill an icebox. I think we're missing as a state a real opportunity not to market our uniqueness to out-of-state anglers who go to Florida to fish the same types of water we have with even much more restrictive limits. These out-of-state anglers could make up any lost revenue if, and I say if, anglers choose not to come south in Texas to fish our waters. I personally feel we would not see a reduction in anglers coming south to fish our end of the coast. In closing, I'd like to point out to the commissioners, myself and many others in this room make 100% of our livelihood from a public resource. It's a crying shame. Many don't fully understand that it's a privilege, and I repeat that word, a privilege, not a right to make a living from a public resource. With that being said, myself and many others are going to do everything we can to assure that we protect and leave the fishery in a better state than we found it. It's just a shame too many other folks don't share our feelings and only look at things in the short term. I ask you, please, help keep the Lower Laguna Madre, the jewel of South Texas, our own Texas Keys. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shuler. We certainly appreciate your commitment to the resource. Next up, Scott Murray, and then be ready, Everett Johnson.
Honorable Commissioners, Management, and Staff, my name is Scott Murray, and I live on Baffin Bay near Rivera, Texas. And in recent years, I've spent a considerable amount of time towards spotted sea trout conservation. I'm sure that many of you attended at least one of the many spotted sea trout public scoping meetings that were held over the past 6 months. You probably heard many of the same concerns and comments that I did, comments such as, maybe the decline is caused by water quality issue. Maybe it's the Mansfield Pass showing up. Maybe the biologists aren't sampling the right places. The bottom line is, regardless of the cause, the effect is very evident. The trout population is declining in the Lower Laguna Madre. Therefore, regardless of the cause or causes, something must be done to protect the resource, and a good start is to reduce the harvest through lower bag limits. Let's take a closer look at Texas Parks and Wildlife's data and the probable cause for this decline. Catch rates for trout in the Lower Laguna Madre have shown a steady decline since 1985. During the spring of 06, the Lower Laguna Madre had its lowest catch rate since 1985. Trophy trout have declined as well. From 1982 through 2000, there was about an 80% decline in trophy trout catch per hour in the Lower Laguna Madre. Recruitment of young fish into the fishery is excellent, and the trend of 14 to 16-inch fish is upward. However, it is clear from the data that a large percentage of these young fish are disappearing quickly because they're caught. Therefore, the spawning biomass of those collective females that are capable of spawning continue to decline. One might conclude that the probable cause of this decline, pure and simple, is fishing pressure on a very targeted species. Coastwide, including the Lower Laguna Madre, combined private and party boat fishing pressure is almost double from 1984 to present. Fishing pressure on spotted sea trout is not unique to Texas. Other states, such as Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia, have experienced fishing pressure to the point of overfishing their spotted sea trout fisheries. Based on available data, three of these states anticipate a total reevaluation of their management goals for spotted sea trout. Regionally, our Texas bays and estuaries differ ecologically as well as the fishing pressure they receive, including variances in game fish population dynamics. With one set of regulations governing saltwater game fish for the entire coast, it is extremely important that we are sensitive to the fact that the best management plan for fisheries in one bay system might not necessarily be the best plan for others. I, along with many other interested stakeholders, salute the Commission, and especially Dr. McKinney and his coastal fisheries staff, for getting out ahead of the curve and developing and providing a regional or ecosystem-based management plan for spotted sea trout in the lower Laguna Madre. And also, as a matter of information, I have for the record two mid-coast letters of support from the Coastal Bend Bays, the Estuaries Program, and the Coastal Bend Bays Foundation, and many of the members such as Chamber of Commerce and the Port of Corpus Christi support this as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murray. We appreciate your support and your commitment to the resource. Next, we have Everett Johnson and Leonard Rainey. Be ready.
I would like to thank the Commission for this opportunity to speak here today. My name is Everett Johnson. I reside at Seadrift, Texas, and I am a fishing guide and the publisher-editor of the Gulf Coast Connection Texas Saltwater Fishing Magazine. My purpose here today is to encourage your support of regionalized regulation for the management of our spotted sea trout fishery. The Texas coast is a vast and wonderful environment, ranging from an uncommon river-mouth estuary on the Sabine to the only hypersaline lagoon in North America on the south. Recreational angling, as you well know, is a very popular pastime here in Texas and has been growing on a 7-year average of nearly 2,000 new anglers per month. Spotted sea trout are enormously popular, and the recreational angling community, equipped with the absolute best tackle gear and boats we have ever seen, are applying greater pressure than ever before. Years ago, following the elimination of the commercial harvest for sea trout here in Texas, it was widely believed that sport fishermen could never hurt this resource. That belief was based entirely upon angling pressure as it was understood up to that time. Evidently, much has changed. We have not experienced a killer freeze here on the Texas coast since 1989, yet the population survey data compiled by the Coastal Fisheries Division clearly points to continuous decline in the lower Laguna Madre during that period. Our current spotted sea trout management regulations date to a time when there were far fewer anglers, far fewer guides, stronger freshwater inflows, and some bays with freer flowing passes. Soon you will decide whether the historic one-size-fits-all management schemes are still the best for Texas, or perhaps it is time to adopt more regionally specific plans. Through my publishing and guiding efforts, I am in a very unique position to acquire feedback. When we began what has become a now widely supported and subscribed campaign of Just Keep Five for spotted sea trout, many people predicted we would fail. We would not only fail to spread that plan and its popularity among anglers, but we would fail as a business. Texas saltwater fishermen just aren't going to buy into catch and release or taking less than a full limit, we were told. I would submit, given the success of this publication over the past 6 years, those critics were wrong. Some will try to discredit the coastal fisheries data. Others will call for habitat enhancement rather than changing fishing regulation. Yet meanwhile, by all signs available, the decline will continue. To any who would disagree, I will say, as I said here before, if by some chance this data could be flawed and we could be led to make a mistake, we will at least have erred on the side of conservation. Mr. Johnson. It is my hope and my dream that by encouraging greater stewardship of the spotted sea trout resource, we will not see no-keep regulation in our lifetimes, and we will pass this resource to future generations in better shape than we found it.
Thank you, Thank Mr. Johnson. I appreciate your commitment in putting conservation first, and I enjoy your publication. You do a good job of getting conservation information out there.
Thank you.
All right, Leonard, how are you? And let me see, good to see you. And next up after Leonard, be ready, Brandon Schuler again? Different Schuler, maybe. All right.
Mr. Fitzgerald, commissioners, I'm proud to be here with y'all. I'd like to talk about the vocation issue. I've had questions here about what's the difference. Actually, when you look at what the difference would be is management, resource management. When you're there fishing, it takes basic knowledge of where the fish are, where their migrating patterns are, where their breeding grounds will be, what type of bait or lure you use to present it with. You throw the lure out and present it to the fish, he has a choice of taking it or not. But if he does take it and you feel him, you set the hook can slip out of his mouth. You can hang him up, you can hang him real good, and he can get hanging around, get tangled up in the brush and break off. Or you can bring him to the surface. As you reach down to get him out of the boat, he's jumping, swinging around, trying to get away, and you can lose him. But the most important thing is, you have this fish here that took a good large many years to probably produce it. You can make a decision there, is this fish more important for you to kill or to release for somebody else to catch where he can reproduce? We're talking about managing the resource. If the fish is illegal fish, naturally, he'll be turned loose. Now, let me see if I can go at it this way. Years and years and years ago, with our deer population, spotlighting was a big problem. So the commissioners passed the law against spotlighting. When you look at migratory birds as they fly through the country, it's against the law to feed them. Now, as it stands right now, there's nothing here to protect these catfish. The stuff I sent y'all here was catfish pictures. I took catfish at the Athens fishery. The fish weren't feeding. They'd been fed. They were laying their garment. We took a double handful of shrimp and cut it in small pieces. We threw it in the water, and you can see what kind of action you had here. Those fish started in a feeding frenzy. With a man with a bow and arrow there, I could probably shoot four or five of them at one time. They were so thick put together. I've heard stories here already about three people have gone fishing with a bow and arrow, or hunting with a bow and arrow, and they've killed their limit each day. That's 175 fish caught. There's the danger here of poaching because those fish can be taken and sold. But the most important thing here is we've got a valuable resource. The cat fishermen are just coming like the bass fishermen. They're working to realize the importance of their sport, of their fish. They're doing catch and release tournaments.
Senator, your 3 minutes are up. Go ahead. Just wrap it up. That's fine. Go ahead.
You know, I can go ahead?
Yes, sir. That's okay. Right. Go ahead. Just wrap it up.
Gentlemen, we have a resource that's been worked and built over the many years. Our bass population and our catfish population didn't happen. It done with management. It was done with the support of the fishermen. If we fail to do something about this, we could put in jeopardy one of the second most popular fish in the state of Texas. The fish should be caught. They shouldn't be slaughtered like pigs. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Leonard, and we appreciate your interest in the resource and your input. The next speaker, Brandon Schuler, with Darren Jones as a backup.
Thank you, commissioners, for your time. And yes, I am the other Schuler. My father is Bruce Schuler. I'm Captain Brandon Schuler, for the record, of Getaway Adventures Lodge in Port Mansfield. what I really want to do is talk about legacy. This is actually, I'm 34 years old. As a guide in the state of Texas, that makes me fairly young. I've got about 30 more years of guiding behind my belt. I left a lucrative career as an investment banker with MetLife as a pension manager to become a fishing guide. I was an Olympic coach before that. My life has been dedicated to numbers. If I sat with an athlete or sat down with one of my investment clients and told them that their stock portfolio has gone from $625,000 down to $375,000 over a 20-year period, they'd boot me out of the room. Something needs to be done. What I looked at, there's been a lot of people say that there's not an issue of pressure, it's an issue of water quality. I actually took these numbers, and there was an eloquent saying yesterday from one of the commissioners talking about our beloved red-eared sliders that pressure cannot maintain sustainability. These are taken directly from Texas Parks and Wildlife license sales numbers in the five counties, coastal counties, from Brooks, from Kennedy down to Cameron County. One of the issues facing us is the expansion. There's three roads that come into Port Mansfield. Well, basically one, 186. 14, 20, and 77 fill those roads. Fills 186. They're expanding 1482 right now to maintain the traffic and help the traffic flow into Port Mansfield. And they're also extending 77 in the 69 corridor, which is going to make accessibility to Port Mansfield a lot easier. In those five counties, Brooks, Cameron, Hidalgo, Kennedy, and Willoughby, there were 20,283 licenses sold alone. To that, if you cut down a linear mileage on the intercoastal waterway, that breaks down to roughly 18 miles to the land cut, 32 miles south to South Bay. That's 390 anglers per one linear mile in the Laurel Laguna Madre. This is a bay system of 550 square miles. With that said, if you break it down to the 550 square miles with those license sales on there, that's 36.8 anglers per square mile, 12.8 boats per square mile if you say three anglers to a boat. This is not counting the additional traffic that comes in from San Antonio in your westernmost counties. Going on a little bit more with the pressure, guide pressure. 18.3% of guide license sold in the state of Texas are sold in the Lower Laguna Madre, 173. That breaks down to 3.23 guides per linear mile on the intercoastal waterway and 3.26 per square mile, 0.326 per square mile. Now, I know my time's up. I want to fly through this next one very quickly. I'm sorry. One thing Texas needs to do, and looking at this, and I call it the Kevin Costner rule, build the dreams. If you build it, they will come. I compared our license sales to Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. Louisiana has 16% non-resident license sales to the resident license sales. Mississippi and Alabama are roughly close to 20%. Texas comes in at a whopping 4%. Okay? Florida's at 40%. Our fishery is very close to Florida. We have the four main species that are fished in Florida. Snook, tarpon, redfish, and speckled trout. Why are we not marketing this? Why are we not moving it? What we can do is by decreasing our fishing limit to a bag limit of actually three, create a thriving fishery, we can turn our $1.6 billion a year in fishing revenue and 25 to 30,000 jobs and try to mirror Florida, which takes a whopping $5 billion in income from fishing and produces 60,000 jobs a year. If we lower our reduction in limits, it is going to help us build a fishery that's going to bring people into Kevin Costner. I appreciate y'all listening. I appreciate the efforts of Dr. McKinney.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Shooter. Thank you very much. Darren Jones is it Jim Smart? It's Jim Smart. I can't make out the last word. Is that correct? As a backup? Okay. Mr. Jones?
Thank you all for your time, gentlemen. I'm a recreational angler. I don't have any prepared speeches or numbers or anything like that for you. I'm coming at you straight. As a guy that was born and raised in Corpus Christi, lived in the Rio Grande Valley, and I fished everywhere from the Oasis Bay to South Bay. And this is something that the five trout rule is something that I want to support, and so is regionalization. But with that, you know, I've spent most of my life on the Texas coast. The only time I was away was when I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps. That's the only time I've been away from Texas. And I've seen a lot of things change in Texas. And one of them is the amount of fishing pressure on the lower Rio Grande Valley. We have an emerging middle class down there. a lot more flash boats on the water, and as you can see, you know, the numbers are down. There's no way to deny it. One thing I would like to see y'all take into consideration is I know that there seems to be a lack of common sense these days in a lot of things that we do. And I just don't want to see a knee-jerk reaction to the rest of the state. We go to five tribes, the rest of the state doesn't need it, then don't do it there. That's the whole thing about regionalization. Make sure that the numbers support it, and I say that y'all give the Lower Laguna, give it 3 to 5 years to see if this really works before we go and do it to Corpus or Rockport or anywhere like that. So just keep that in consideration. You know, let's apply some good common sense principles to our management. I support this, and I could go on and on about why we need to support it, but that's just coming from a recreational angler. I've got little kids. I want them to enjoy the same times that I had down there wade fishing and just enjoying being on the coast. And it's not about catching fish and putting them in the box. It's about going fishing and spending time on that beautiful piece of water. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jones, and thank you for your interest in the resource. Mr. Smart, and as a backup, Mike Stapleton.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I'm Jim Smart. I'm State Chairman of the Recreational Fishing Alliance. We initially opposed the regionalization, and were quite vocal about it. But Dr. McKinney and his team have put together some serious background information and supplied it to us and to you commissioners over the last couple of months that have changed our mind. We at RFA support the regionalization plan. We also still stand by the water quality issue, and we think that fighting for fresh water is a noble cause, but humans will win. And I've talked to several of the commissioners here about this, but I think that we need to build a coalition between TCEQ, Parks and Wildlife, the Land Office, the Hunting and Fishing Support Group, CCA, RFA, SEA, and we need to apply for grants to open these coastal fish passes. Coast Harbor Engineering, as you all know, they've helped you before. Let them do some studies, and let's try to get in and solve. The easiest way to solve some of the water quality problems are to open the historical passes. Matagorda's closed. Mansfield, we feel, will be shortly. And recreational offshore yachts are having to move 40 miles one direction or the other. So it's drying up these coastal communities. And it will be beneficial, and Dr. McKinney said it would be. But on the regionalization, we'd like to support that and keep it localized there. I think if we have this larger problem, and from what I've heard, the numbers were a little more sensitive than, or a little lower than what we first saw, I would strongly suggest the commission look at any tournament south of the land cut that deals with trout. And if it's not a catch and release or live weigh-in tournament, I think it should be restricted immediately. We at RFA don't want to see a resource in trouble. And we at first thought this one, there were other issues that we could get around. But the numbers are overwhelming, and we support Dr. McKinney, Coastal Fisheries, and the commission and their efforts. We would pray that the commission would set the ship in motion to go forward with looking at entertaining the thought of dealing with several of the key coastal passes and make that a 10-year plan or 7-year plan to visit those. We would be happy to give you whatever input we could on that. I thank the commission for their work and Dr. McKinney and staff. So I am Mr. 180 today.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mrs. Mark, for keeping an open mind, and certainly you've got some great ideas that I'm sure staff will follow up on.
When the numbers are there, we don't have a problem.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Stapleton, followed by Dennis Lugg.
Mr. Chairman, wherever he is, Commissioners, my name is Mike Stapleton. I'm on the board of the Recreational Fishing Alliance of Texas and Texas Gulf Coast Stewards. And first I'd like to say I'm pleased to hear that there's been some more studies done in the Lower Laguna, and it's been a heated issue and a very emotional one as well. I know I've been called a few choice words along the way. If the trout, though, are in as bad a shape as we say that they are, I want to echo Jensen, and I think we need to take a serious look at trout fishing tournaments in the Laguna Madre. The fish that are targeted in these tournaments are guys in 60, 70-mile-an-hour boats who do this for a living. They're professionals, and they are after the big fish. Those fish are our brood stock. Those sows lay a lot of eggs. And we spend millions of dollars on hatchery upkeep and hatchery maintenance and hatcheries in general. We need to protect those fish. We've got a problem. And I find it ironic that one of the larger conservation groups in the Gulf states has been relatively silent on this issue. And the reason being is if they came out in favor of the five fish rule in good faith, they would have to remove trout from their summer-long tournament. So I think we need to pay attention to the rhetoric, and I will say the things nobody else wants to say about it. So with that being said, I had to tear up my fire and brimstone speech last night when I found out there had been some new studies. And, you know, I have to say that I agree with Jim along the water quality lines, and you know, our passes are closing rapidly, and years ago Governor Connolly implemented the Texas fishing license for the sole purpose of maintaining our coastal passes to ensure the health of the bay systems and wetlands. And right now I feel like we're at a crossroads where the passes are either closing or closed. Freshwater inflow laden with fertilizers that choke off oxygen supplies and introduce toxins into these ecosystems is a problem. And if we look at the Laguna Madre, the inflow from the Arroyo Colorado that has been diverted out for agricultural use and then put back in again carries those toxins, and it depletes the oxygen supply. And we have reduced water flow as well. We've got a hypersaline bay system by nature, and you couple those things with a very shallow average depth of the bay system and the searing heat of our summers, and you have the makings of a catastrophic problem. And I think we need to address those things. We see similar situations in Cedar Bayou, St. Charles Bay, and we're looking at enormous growth again along the coast, and we need to be proactive rather than reactive regarding our bays. I've had recent discussion with policy advisors and commissioners at TCEQ, and the RFA will be meeting with them in the next couple weeks, and I would urge you guys to take a leadership role amongst all the agencies involved. I know it's a mess, and I know it's a lot of trouble, but I'd like to see Parks and Wildlife step up and take the leadership role and apply for the grants and do something to protect the ecosystems. We can play with fish numbers all day long, but we've got to start looking at habitat or it is going to come back to bite us. And I feel very strongly about that. I also have one other thing, just kind of on a personal note, and I think the rhetoric along with this issue has been something that has really bothered me and a great number of other people. And, you know, even today I'm finding people that have been staunch advocates of the five fish rule the whole way. And we know the problem is fishing pressure based on what we've been told today, yet at the same time they will stand here and talk about marketing these fish to the rest of the world, thereby increasing fishing pressure. So I think we all need to have a gut check and use a little more common sense from here on out, and maybe we can do something to protect our resource. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stapleton. Very interesting and very good comments. Mr. Lugg, and followed by Michael Dell.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Dennis Lugg. I'm Vice President of the Coastal Bend Guides Association. I grew up in Rio Grande Valley. I fished at Lower Laguna Madre in my early years. I now live in Aransas Pass. We, as the Coastal Bend Guides Association, do oppose the regionalization, any change in bag, and the retention limits on there. The main thing is we do believe there are issues with water, of course, fertilizer runoff, the shrimp farms, numerous issues down there. It's not, granted, fishing pressure is a problem, but just lower the bag limit alone is not going to cure this problem. You're going to have to address the other issues, the closing up of the Port Mansfield Pass. There are quite a few things there. We have been told, of course, like I said, there's new information coming in all times. We are told at these scoping meetings and public hearings, one thing, when some of us get up and present other facts and figures, we go to the next scoping meeting or public hearing, it's been changed by the folks from Parks and Wildlife. It seems like they're kind of defending their position instead of really having all their facts in front of them at the time. So this has kind of thrown the question of how accurate is all this information. We agree. There needs to be management. But I don't think just strictly the bag and possession limit is going to cure it at this time. Again, I totally agree. If you're going to have a tournament, you should not be able to kill those fish. Again, don't market. That becomes strictly a money thing, not a management thing, if you're going to market our trout down there, our fishing area. So we need several things to improve this fishing. Personal note, I'm a retired state trooper here in Texas. Okay? I've gone to many of these meetings, and it kind of bothers me to see our parks and wildlife people doing the 180 or twisting around and not just standing straight forward and say, here's the facts, here's our stuff to back it up. It's kind of a, well, we're going to run this through one way or another. I don't think y'all are actually getting all the full information either. And this is my personal opinion, not the Guide Association. But like I said, being a police officer, I see a lot of things that I don't like at these meetings. I want to see improvement done. I don't think five fish bag limit is going to be the answer. Again, it's going to be numerous things that have to be done. I live in Aransas Pass now. I say we, all of us that fish, not just guys, friends. I got a lot of friends in San Antonio, but that's where I work that out. And with the fuel prices, they're saying, man, we're going to have to cut back. We're not going to be able to come to the coast as much. It's going to have a major economic impact. You know, a lot of them saying, hey, with the fuel costs, we're not going to drive all the way down to the valley and fish very often. They're going to go some, but they're not going to go as often. Same thing is happening to us there at Aransas Pass, Rockport, Ingleside, Portland. So there is a major economic effect taking place. So thank you for your time. Please look at this, especially this tournament part.
Let me assure you that the staff, just like any investigator, as you're acquiring facts, you're inputting them into the system. To the extent that new facts surface, new studies or new data is furnished to us, obviously staff's going to consider that. So don't feel that staff is not doing their work. But they're doing their best, and I can assure you they're very professional and follow up on
it. It seems that these facts always come up after the hearing. You know, the additional information,
sure,
which we don't get to analyze ourselves during the hearings. That's why I brought that up.
Any other comments from the commissioner?
Well, I know it's a controversial issue, but I would like to defend our staff because I've worked closely with them to develop scientific principles. They really work hard to make sure that our policies are based on sound science. And if your association has a very specific objection or however you want to raise the charge, but if you see information you believe is incorrect, poorly corrected, or based on poor science, we certainly want to hear it. But I think an unfounded, broad suspicion or charge is one that is not consistent with my experience and my judgment. I think the rest of the judges and the commission, we do rely on the information. I think they get very good information. I think you should expect information to change. As you raise arguments, they should answer them. That's what they should do, and they should bring that forward. You will see new information, just as the mic is saying. We want them to do that. We want them to do that. So that should not create suspicion. It should create trust that they're responding to you.
I agree. One quick example, our seagrass issue around there. We were promised by the Parks and Wildlife people at all these hearings, we're going to put run lanes in. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. How do you get an accurate assessment when you implement a law that went into effect last May 1st? They were going to do flyover, take pictures for the crop scoring. Guess what? That was just done about a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, we were told. How do you do an accurate assessment? We were also told these run lanes. Now we're flat told, we're not going to put them in. This is what we're dealing with out there.
Okay. Any, I don't know the answer on that one. I can't speak to it. You should be able to count on what you're promised if you, in fact, were promised. So I'd encourage you to talk to them and ask them to clarify exactly what was promised and what the schedule for implementation is, and you're owed a response to that. But I don't think that affects the sea trout issue, and I would hope it wouldn't take away your confidence in the information and professionalism of our group. You may disagree with their opinion, but I think they're highly professional, and we certainly rely on the information, and we trust them.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the commissioner? Okay. Michael Dell with Nancy Day. Back up.
Good morning, commissioners. Number one, I'm a professional fishing guide out of the coast of Bend. I fish north of this area. I stand opposed to regionalization
and the 5-trout limit because we're not addressing all the problems down there. As I've attended over 7 of these scoping meetings, all but one of the biologists in there says this is not the answer. This is not going to solve it. As Dr. McKinney said a while ago, he wants to make a trophy trout area back down there. Well, let's put a trophy trout area all the way in Texas. Let's figure out what is going to cause all the problems out there. As it's been brought to you previously today, if you're going to do this, stop killing trout. Stop the tournaments that are down here. And the only way they can bring a trout in for a weigh-in is if it's a live trout and can be released. If we're going to stop the trophy fish and save that broodstock, let's save it. You know? Let's just not swat at the gnat and eat the elephant here, guys. Let's address these water problems. And Dr. McKinney's brought some things up that we've been bringing up in the scoping hearings today. But one of the problems that he didn't address is down in there is shrimp and the crabs. Both counts are down for the lower valley, lower lagoon in there. And when you've got biomass stock of the 14 to 16 inch fish and you look at the fishing pressure and the size fish caught, where's all the big fish going? They're not dying. We'd find them. You know, the people down there would find them. So, let's look at this whole situation out there and see if there's not some more problems we can address at the same time in it. And I thank y'all because I get to make a living in the outdoors enjoying this resource. And number one, I'm not a meat hauler. A lot of people are, and I don't. I'm out here to entertain clients and to teach them the resource, see what's there and protect it for the generations to come. And I know management changes have got to be made out here, and we need some help out there doing it. Let's just take the whole ball and play with it, not just play ping pong. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Ms. Day, followed by Ellis Gilliland.
Thank you, gentlemen. My name is Nancy Day, and I'd like to read a statement that has been previously submitted on behalf of the Coastal Bend Guides Association. The Coastal Bend Guides Association is strongly opposed to regionalization of the Texas Gulf Coast and to lowering the bag limits for spotted sea trout in the lower Laguna Madre. Regionalizing the Texas Gulf Coast is to provide a special interest group satisfaction that the lower Laguna Madre will provide them with trophy trout. The management options presented by the Texas Parks and the Wildlife Department for the justification for the regionalization and lowering spotted sea trout bag limit proposals is only a hypothesis. It is an assumption that if limits are lowered to a specific number, that the results will be what CBWD stated. In the past, management options were presented to the public to argue that the numbers of spotted sea trout would increase if a variety of measures were taken, such as only taking one trout over 25 inches per angler per day and taking away the professional fishing guide's limits. Those management options were nothing more than a hypothesis, as there has been no marked difference in the creel count since they went into effect. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Department biologists have not proved there is a significant evidence of a fishing pressure problem with the trout population in the lower Laguna Madre. There is evidence that attention is greatly needed for better water quality. Biologist Randy Blankenship wrote, because of the lack of freshwater inflow, little rainfall, and high evaporation, the salinity of the lower Laguna Madre often exceeds that of seawater. According to the Texas Water Development Board, the lower Laguna Madre is the only place on the Texas Gulf Coast where it has had nothing but negative water flow for 30 years. Lowering limits will not solve the issue if the main problem is not remedied. Opening and maintaining the jetty and the channel at Port Mansfield will allow necessary positive water flow needed for cleansing the bay system and allowing bait fish to prosper. Without the food needed for trout to exist, they are migrating to better bay systems to forage. There has been a marked increase in trophy trout being caught in the upper Laguna Madre. The opening of Padre Channel has provided a marked increase in water flow. The bait fish are flourishing and trout are migrating into this area. Not only will the trout migrate due to the lack of a food source, but the anglers will also. They will take their business and boats into other coastal waters where trout limits will be higher. Redfish Bay's seagrass is protected. More boats mean more chances of seagrass being uprooted. Texas Parks and Wildlife Department's education efforts have been meager by any standard. In fact, TPWD has marked only one of the 10 run lanes promised in the protected seagrass area. It's a major effort by those fishing Redfish Bay on a regular basis to do the education of others in order to keep the bay system from being shut down to propel boats. It is easier simply for TBWD to lower bag limits than to actually solve the real issues that need attending. Help to support our thriving fishery. The simple fact is that whatever problems do exist, they can be remedied without taking away from the anglers and area's revenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Day. Any comments from any commissioner?
I wonder, could Larry speak to the tournament issue?
Certainly.
Tournament size. Everybody's raised the question, Larry, we're taking the big fish, and they've also raised the question about tournament. Could you speak to those, please?
You could also, Larry, speak to the migratory issues this year.
Tournament issues, actually, and that's something we can take a look at, but in reality, those tournaments fit into our normal management pattern. We take those into account. People can take whatever the limit is, and that works into our process. But we'll look at those types of things. Anything that can help, we'll take a look at it, absolutely, just to see. Because, and more tournaments these days are trying to go to catch release anyway, and as we know. So I know those folks that do participate in tournaments and support them, or they can't have them unless they have the fish, so they're going to do what they can. So we'll look at that.
Well, I'm trying to understand. I don't see how the tournaments, other than putting more fishermen out there, I don't see how I'm missing where there's a change. If they've got to follow the five fish limit like everybody else.
There might be, for example, if it was localized, or they have practice concern that there'd be a local impact or something like that. But we'll look at the tournaments. We'll look at them. Absolutely. I'm sorry, Ms. Chris, you had
it. There were issues that were raised or questions raised on the migratory issues with the spotted sea trout. I just wanted to talk to that a little bit. And also, could you just give us a broad overview of our modeling process and how we develop these hypotheses?
As far as the spotted sea trout don't migrate. Typically, our study, studies that we have available, even our own studies, show that for the most part, these are tagging-type studies, that they don't move a great deal, if at all, so there's not really a migratory issue. The concern, I think the point to make is that when you open passes up sufficient, you have what you will attract bait fish, they attract trout from the local area, something like that, but that's why we don't see any evidence of migration, so don't have that there.
And I wanted that to be clarified, and also just how we go through the modeling process and some of the scoping procedure that we went through as well.
I'm trying to think about how to summarize your model. We use our database, the 30-year database, to develop the basis for our models. We use models that have been developed in conjunction with other states and fisheries and so forth, and use the data. I'm trying to figure out how best to. It's more complicated than probably you want to know if you're just trying to get at the answer of how confident we have in that thing. I guess we actually come at it this way. The models in themselves, of course, is the issue of junk in, junk out, which you have to worry about. That's always a concern with models, and we have concerns with various models on the Red Snapper, and we've expressed those types of things. But nearly all the issues with models comes with what data you have to put into those models and what assumptions you have to make. And that's where we feel very confident in the model approaches that we use, is that our database is so extensive, and our models are so careful with making sure our data sets are as complete as possible, that the information going into them are quite good. And then we test those models, obviously with passing regulations, as I showed you in the graphic when we dropped the guide license or guide bag limits, we can actually see those. So our predicted outcomes have historically followed the reality. So that gives us confidence that those models are as, as reflective as models can be of what will happen. I'm not sure that's getting what you
want. That's good. And also, just in terms of the age distribution, the age structure, which we're really trying to shift to the right, when you went through the modeling process, what 15 to 17-inch fish, you know, the above 13 or 4, that if we have a bag limit of 3 versus 7, give us a sense of the sensitivity analysis and the time in which we'll see a change in that age distribution.
Well, if we were to use a 3 fish bag limit, basically we reach the same end point, but we reach it more quickly.
Wow.
That's what within, I think I'm going to be wrong on this, but I'll give you the exact numbers we have in those models, didn't bring them here, where we will see the benefits of the 5, 50% in the first year, 80% in the following year would probably be a 70 and 90 or something like that. It's just, so that if we shifted that way, we move more quickly.
And a 7, tag limit at 7?
We move it the other direction.
Sure.
It's a very strict one-to-one relationship as you move across there. The higher the bag limit, or the more restricted the bag limit, the faster
based
you get.
On that model, we may not see a change for a few years.
Oh, I'd share with someone else. Yes. Yeah. Typically, if we were going to full effect of this thing, you have to go through a life cycle of a complete life cycle. That's 6 to 9 years for spotted sea trout. So full impact of this regulation, 6 to 9 years is what we're talking about. That's just the life cycle of the fish. All those pet species have to go through a complete life cycle to all be subjected to this regulation before you see it. But we'll begin to see impacts before that, so that gives us some encouragement. So the downside is it could take 6 to 9 years to get us where we want to go, but we'll see if we're on the right track in the first couple of years.
Yes.
If that's what you're getting. I'm sorry I was going around and around with you there, and I didn't understand your question.
That's good. Thanks.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes, I'm Dr. McKinney. It seems to me, in each presentation that we've had today, that I think people do admit, and our studies certainly support, a declining resource in the lower Divina Madre. Mm-hmm. But several people have also really stressed the water quality as being a driving force versus maybe, to me it's indisputable that we do have a declining resource. The studies do support it. And if we're going to raise that resource, we're going to have to take some action. But also, the water quality and all this testing and the various things that you continue to do and monitor there, what is the nature of the water quality there, and what impact do you think ultimately opening Mansfield Pass up and going back in and dredging, what impact is that going to have on the Board of the Mother?
Right now, that's our indications of all of our data that we have. You know, the health of the lower Laguna Madre is in good shape overall. Now, the issues were raised about the Arroyo Colorado and inputs there, and those issues are of great concern to us because that whole valley is changing. As some of your, some of those that witnessed here, the growth there is phenomenal, and then there's one of the fastest growing areas, urbanization. Big parts of that region are going over from open ranch land to more concentrated farms, and so there are more releases. Nearly all the irrigation, not nearly all, there's two or three points along the Laguna Arroyo being one, and there's another one, the name is escaping right now, where most of the irrigation water from South Texas actually goes now, and so there's a lot more fresh water carrying whatever chemicals are there in there. So there are concerns. You have the brown tides and all those types of issues. But at this point, with all those pressures coming, Laguna is still sufficiently healthy and dynamic that it's absorbing those concerns. Our concern is it might not be able to do it much longer. So we're working and have been working with TCEQ and others down there to say, let's not let this get in the situation where we're having to restore it. Let's try to get ahead of the curve. It was a difficult fight, a difficult issue for some years. We had shrimp farms that came in there, and those were issues that were tremendous challenge. And we had as I told some folks, that there was there's not many instances where our staff had put their jobs on the line, but in that case, when we were in the legislature trying to raise those issues of the impacts of shrimp farms, there were those kind of things were happening, so they've been there and so forth. So back on the track of it is we've got challenges we want to look at water quality, and we want to keep track on it and keep moving because the challenges, they could be there. And there may be something we're not detecting. We can't say that we're not seeing something there. But at this point, no. following up on your discussion with Pat, as I presented, at this point, we can't, because of the recruitment is so good for spotted sea trout, that our data shows there's good recruitment for there. Other species are coming through those passes as well. And the fact that that pass has been open mostly for a period of time when the decline has occurred, I can't make a relationship between the status of that pass and the health of that system. But there's no doubt that, you know, having those passes open and more so is a benefit, and we support those efforts and we want to do that. We have to be real careful as an agency to try to look at the cost benefit from that type of thing, but from just the resource itself. There's no doubt that Port Mansfield and others need those passes dredged for their economic development and support, and we're behind that. But and wherever we could find evidence that there was an issue related to the water circulation and water quality, we have addressed it and we'll do so, and we're going to be right on that. No, we haven't stopped and we will not stop.
Right. So,
I don't know if that gets it kind of where you're going, but yeah. Kind of rambled there a little bit. Is that?
No, I think you covered it. Thank you.
Yeah, as Commissioner Montgomery, to close, Commissioner Brown's thought, I'm glad you raised that. Is, in your judgment, is there any way to deal with the population decline and help restore the fishery using any tool other than catch, the allowable catch, in the near term?
And in the near term, no. That's the only tool we have available. Now, we are working, and we'll continue to work, and we appreciate, and we'll look forward to the support of the Recreation Fishing Association. I appreciate Jim's statement here today, because we have had those disagreements over this, and I appreciate your openness to look at it, and we're going to work with them on that and others, so thank him for that. But we will look forward to your support, Recreation Fishing Life, and the Coastal Bend Guides Association in dealing with maintaining the water quality health of the Lower Laguna Madre and becoming involved in that, which, you know, they have not at this point, but we'll welcome them on board. We need all the help we can get.
And in your judgment, do you believe that the catch restriction will, in fact, have a direct population impact, and is probably the higher level is probably one of the primary causes, if not the primary cause of the decline?
Every bit of information we have available to us indicates that that's the case, and that's what I believe.
Yeah.
Commissioner Parker?
Has staff been doing any monitoring of the impact of the fishing tournaments?
No, well, we have not. We've done some quick surveys of kind of where they are. We don't have a good handle on it because there's really no way to track it other than, you know, newspapers and advertising. We don't have, there's no requirements for permits or anything like that.
I understand that. But in the actual monitoring of those fishing tournaments on site, is there any way to collect data?
Well, we can collect data on it. It takes resources to do that, and we'll take a look at what we can do and report back to you.
Very good. I would really like to see some monitoring data, fishing tournaments in that area.
We will do that.
I have one question, Doctor. And just so the record's clear, in your job, in your profession, do you customarily rely upon data and models such as the one that you've done here to reach the conclusion that you've reached? I mean, this is, just so the record's clear, the modeling is not something that you just did for this particular project. I mean, you do this day in and day out and have done it for years.
It's a standard procedure for fisheries management to predict regulation impacts and what regulations may or may not work in offshore fishing.
Yes, and the opinions that you've expressed here and your recommendations are based on that modeling that you've employed for years in your job.
Solely based on those recommendations, yes,
okay. Thank you.
In fact, you might, since we're doing it, go ahead and talk about the vetting of the methodologies we're using. But I don't remember if it's the National Academy of Sciences who did the coastal methodology or what the team was.
The American Fisheries Society is the agency that we have asked and brought in experts in a peer review mode and had them go through everything that we do and report independently back of what their opinion was.
So the leading authority in the field has reviewed our methodologies and approved them.
And found them exemplary in their terms.
And just so it's clear for the record, obviously this is only the beginning, and we're going to continue to study the issues and the impact. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. It's an ongoing issue. One very quick, there was a couple of issues raised about the seagrass and where we are in that, and I have proposed a briefing for you all in May. That was last year you passed the regulations in May. We thought that would be an appropriate time, so we will have a briefing for you on what we're doing on seagrass and try to address concerns that were raised here in front of you.
Thank you. Any other comments on the commission? Okay, Mr. Gilliland, and as a backup, Christopher Gores. Thank you, Larry. Ellis Gilliland here. I'm speaking for Texas Animals, an animal rights organization on the Internet. I've given you a handout, two pages. The first page is from the 2nd of March Texas Register having to do with javelina, Chapter 65, Wildlife. The second page has to do with bag limits at Chocana State Park last year, specifically on javelina. Going back to the first page, you'll notice marked in yellow, you say in Texas Register, the downward trend in javelina, so it defies logic, it defies biology, it defies everything I can think of to increase the quota bag limit when the resource is going down. And I've been telling you that for years anyway, and apparently you haven't listened. Quote, I'm quoting from underline the yellow paragraph at the bottom, quote, by establishing a finite resource-dependent harvest quota, the department is assured that harvest will not exceed biologically acceptable levels, end quote. That's pure bull. In stronger terms, it's just simply fraud, because you have never enacted any biologically controlled limits that I'm aware of that have been published or unpublished in javelina. You simply, at Chocana State Park, the normal population is 40 or 50, and they're down to 3 last time I counted. Now, if that's biologically accepted, there's something twisted in this department's mind. And, of course, a wildlife management program in javelina is just absolutely ridiculous. There's going to be nothing to manage, because you're going to fill, like the shrimpers want the last shrimp in the Gulf. You people want the last javelina in Texas. Going to the second page, in Choke Canyon State Park, you establish a bag limit of 2 javelina. But you do not abide by that. You just shoot them up all you want, because you intermix. If you go to the harvest report, and you can ask your people to report this, give you a harvest report on Choke Canyon State Park, you will not see javelinas reported. No, sir. You establish a quote, but then you turn your back on it. There's no limit. You have a column in your harvest report for exotics, a generic term, and you put, your own people put feral hogs and javelinas into the exotics column. You will not find javelina reported to the harvest. So with malice of forethought, your people are eradicating javelina. So why don't you publish that? It's an objective of Parks Wildlife Commission to make these animals extinct. You're mythologically concentrated on doing that. Get the harvest report and read it yourself if you think I'm lying to you. Thank you. Any comments from the commissioner? My only comment is that the harvest is going to be based on a department-approved management plan. Next up is Christopher Gores, followed up by Bruce Cartwright. Mr. Boris, okay. Bruce Cartwright. And followed by Joey Park.
Thank you. Thank you for the time here today. As always, I want to thank the commissioners and their staff for the serious effort they go into managing the resources, the natural resources of the state of Texas. I don't represent an organization any longer. I don't represent a contingency, a group. I appreciate all the speakers here today coming from around the state and talking about, you know, what is either good or bad for the Lower Laguna Madre and the Port Mansfield area. I appreciate the comments about the tournaments and the lack of input or input that the Parks and Wildlife get in those statistics. I'm sure it's a difficult thing to measure and quantify, since over the entire area that we're discussing here today, from the land cut at least to the Arroyo Colorado, there isn't one human being that lives on that area of land. There isn't one property owner, aside from the King Ranch and other ranch owners, except for some people that reside in Port Mansfield. Every fishing tournament that takes place in that region is headquartered in Port Mansfield. The effect of those fishing tournaments ought to be a pretty handy thing to measure. Trout in Texas has been a well-known commodity. A lot of new data coming out now to create laws that are going to be more restrictive to the fishermen and most helpful to the fish. Nobody can ever argue with that. I will say that I would have liked, I guess I had the opportunity somehow to get you the input of the people that live, or I should say rent property in Port Mansfield, since every piece of real estate, again, in the whole Bay system is a leasehold with the Williston Navigation District. But, you know, I studied, did a little demographic analysis of the population to help you gentlemen evaluate your socioeconomic impact upon a community. And, you know, there's 210 people that make up the population of leaseholders in Port Mansfield. 210, 50 of those are members of the sport fishing club. So, again, it should be pretty easy to get that number, or that those specific numbers. Bob Kemp, a very important fisheries manager in the state of Texas, he said he just tried to make things happen. If one thing didn't work, he'd try something else. The only time the public gets really behind improvements in the fisheries is when they believe something new and better is going to happen. 1929, studies were published by Pearson and Miles in 1950 that told the state of Texas everything they need to know about a spotted sea trout. Out of time.
Yeah, if you could wrap it up, we'd appreciate
that's
it.
That's okay.
Thank you, Mr.
You got it all.
Thank you very much. Any comments from any commissioner? That's Joey Park, followed by Tim Cook.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Joey Park. I'm here on behalf of Coastal Conservation Association Texas, representing over 50,000 members with chapters across the state of Texas. Here today to voice our support for the proposed regulation changes to your coastal fishing regulations. We appreciate the department's hard work, effort of the staff to continue to support and protect our coastal resources here in the state of Texas. I just want to say thank you. I had one other comment, and I appreciate Dr. McKinney's making a note. As we move forward, if and when our offshore aquaculture facilities take shape, appreciate keeping a point of keeping an eye on those things to watch out for pollution, escapement, diseases, and those kind of things. That's something we're certainly concerned about if that starts to occur in our outside waters. Commissioners, thank you very much. Appreciate all your hard work today.
Mr. Park, thank you, and thank you. CCA does a tremendous job, and your membership is very dedicated to the resource, and we appreciate your support very much. Any other comments? Mr. Cook, followed by Kirby Brown.
Good morning, Commissioners. Director Cook. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment. My name is Tim Cook. I'm the State Conservation Director for the Texas Bass Federation Nation. We're the grassroots arm of the Bass Angler Sportsman Society here in Texas. And I'd like to speak briefly on the proposed regulation for allowing bow fishing for catfish. We are opposed to this regulation. Mr. Rainey made some very valid points earlier. You know, part of the thrill of fishing is not knowing what you're going to catch. And I think allowing bow fishing for the number two freshwater species in Texas kind of goes against management strategies established by the department. Don't think it's good for fishing in general. I don't think enough data has been collected to see what the true impact is going to be on catfish population. So if you are insistent upon approving this regulation, I would ask that you grandfather at the end of this next year, allowing Phil and his staff to properly evaluate it, collect creel surveys, get some kind of idea what the size of fish is being targeted by this very small group, and give this some serious consideration. I thank you all. Also, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve on the Freshwater Fisheries Advisory Board starting this year. I think you should also take into consideration the fact I believe there's four members of that board who are going to speak in opposition to this regulation as well. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. And as you well know, last year there was much discussion on the issue, so we appreciate your comments. Any comments from any commissioner? Kirby Brown? Mr. Brown? I see he's not here. Oops, where were you?
I was hiding behind him.
Okay, followed by Robert Singletary. Go ahead.
Commissioners, my name is Kirby Brown. I'm Executive Vice President for Texas Wildlife Association. Our members own or control over 35 million acres of land in Texas and are conservationists, hunters, and landowners and land managers. I'm here to state support for the staff proposal in the wildlife area. Our members in the north zone were overwhelmingly wanting to keep the zone the same, and the staff did in the end do that, and we appreciate that. We think that that is an overall increase in hunter opportunity by having two zones that are staggered like that, and I think that works very well for turkey hunters. We continue to support the managed lands programs and the opportunity for landowners who are managing those properties to do good things for habitat and all wildlife species. Under lesser prey check-ins, we think that's going to work very well. We would love to see that increased up there in the numbers and people that are participating, but it's good to see where it's going right now. Also, on javelinas, we also think this is a reasonable approach. You have a wildlife management plan, and you have people out there looking at the resource again and managing that resource on-site. So thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Kirby, and thank your membership for their support. You all are great partners with us.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Mr. Singletary, followed by Ed Parton.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Robert Singletary. I'm a member of the Two of Us Houston Bass Club, a member of the Texas Association Bass Clubs, and Texas Black Bass Unlimited. I appreciate what you all do as commissioners of the court and the director of our Texas Parks and Wildlife and what the staff does to protect and conserve our state resources. Also, I respect the right of other sportsmen to participate in managing and harvesting our natural resources, and that's the bow hunters. But we do object to the bow hunters hunting catfish. We feel like that it's a regulation that is possibly difficult to enforce. We feel like also that if you have an undersized catfish, you shoot him with a bow and arrow, it's an animal that is lost forever at that point. We do hope that y'all consider this regulation a little closer. I have visited with several bow hunters in the Dayton Liberty area that hunt the gar and carp on the Trinity watershed, and they, to a certain extent, have felt that this regulation would be an unfair regulation also, and they support us in opposing the fishing for catfish for the bow and arrow. Again, we thank you for the time and the work and the thought that y'all put into it, and especially the staff of Texas Parks and Wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Singletary. Mr. Parton, followed by Ms. Ellison. Mr. Ellison? Ellison, I think. Okay, you're there. Fine, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Bob? I'm here representing freshwater anglers, bass fishermen particularly, sport fishermen, and we want to go on record as saying that we oppose the regulation that allows taking catfish with bow and arrow. I feel that it's an economic issue in so much that we do. I see no contributions on the economic side. I also feel that the resource is there for everyone, and everyone should be able to enjoy it. But there's enough rough fish in our public waters that these guys can take that would benefit our fisheries instead of taking a sport fish that might hurt our fisheries. If we look at the dollar and what they might take away versus what it could contribute, I think it would outweigh the contribution that would be made by allowing this to happen. Sport fishing in the state of Texas generates some $4.2 billion. I'd like to see that increase instead of decrease, and I know you would too, through all the efforts of all the people that makes our resources, our parks, our wildlife, and our fisheries number one in the nation as far as I'm concerned. You guys contribute to that. I think it would behoove you to look at this long and hard, very seriously, and I would appreciate a positive step of restricting the catfish being taken by a bow and arrow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any comments or questions by the commissioner? Mr. Ellison. Thank you, Mr. Parker.
My name is Lindsay Ellison. I drove in from Houston this morning to oppose the bow hunting catfish. There's a lot of reasons that I say that, which most have been brought out before you by a previous speaker. So I won't bore you repeating those. My only comment would be a dead fish is a dead fish. There's no catch and release. Therefore, I ask that you discontinue the bow hunting regulation for catfish. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any additional comments from staff, Larry, or anyone from staff? No? Okay. No, any comments or questions from the commissioners?
No, I'm wondering if we can make a motion for the entire regulatory package as one motion.
If there's no further discussion, I would entertain a motion.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the regulatory package as presented and recommended by staff.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Been moved by...
My motion was to vote on the entire regulatory package.
On the proclamation. I have I have a motion by Commissioner Montgomery, and I have a second by Commissioner Holt to accept the recommended motion as posted there, Commissioner Parker. Yes.
The entire package.
The entire package?
Yes. I'll call for the question. If you'd like some discussion, I'll entertain some discussion. Right? Go ahead.
Is there any methodology that we can use to separate those items?
There's a motion and a second that the whole package be approved. So unless you have a different motion that gets a second, I have to entertain that motion.
Well, then, carving out oat with regard to taking catfish.
Okay, Mr. Montgomery, Commissioner Montgomery made the motion. Do you accept the amendment or not? If it's not, okay. Anyone want to call for the question? Ask for lack of a second.
I'll call for the question.
Call for the question. All in favor of Commissioner Montgomery's motion to accept the proposal as posted, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay. It was all ayes with the exception of Commissioner Parker. Thank you very much. The,